Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
30 years ago, on Christmas Day 1991, the Soviet Union dissolved.
In Moscow, the hammer and sickle is lowered for the last time, and an era comes to an end.
Я прекращаю свою деятельность.
I am ceasing my activities in the post of President of the USSR.
We are standing by for an Oval Office address by President Bush, as he contributes to a day even historians may have trouble describing.
You and I have witnessed one of the greatest dramas of the 20th century, the historic and revolutionary transformation of a totalitarian dictatorship, the Soviet Union, and the liberation of its peoples.
Mikhail Gorbachev, leader of the USSR, stepped down, and Boris Yeltsin became president of a newly independent Russia. And America's Cold War communist adversary, the so-called evil empire, was history. So let's look back at that collapse and its implications with Angela Stent of Georgetown University. She's director of Eurasian, Russian, and East European Studies there. Angela, welcome to Here and Now.
Good to be on your program again.
So as we look back to these events of 1991, a lot is happening in the world. The Berlin Wall fell in 1989, communism fell in Poland and Hungary and Romania. So what's happening inside the Soviet Union at this time?
So Mikhail Gorbachev came to power in 1985, and he vowed to reform the Soviet Union and make it stronger and to give people a little more freedom, to have different voices heard. But by 1991, a lot of his programs really had come unstuck. He vacillated between more radical economic reform and less radical economic reform. The economy was in free fall. Oil prices were very low, which is really what sustained the Soviet economy. And the different ethnic groups, the different nationalities in the Soviet Union were straining to break free of domination by Russia. And so in August 1991, there was an attempted coup against him by a group of rather inept coup plotters who wanted to take the Soviet Union back to the bad old days of a much more repressive system.
If I can pause you and just ask a little about the coup.
Sure.
The next morning after, right, the people of the Soviet Union wake up to Swan Lake on television. And they see on TV, state TV broadcasters saying that Gorbachev is unfit to lead. But then after that, how did the people respond to this coup?
Well, so the people in Moscow, and Moscow is really the major city that counts in Russia historically, they came out in the streets and they saw tanks there. The tanks had been sent by the coup plotters, and they decided to resist. And for reasons that are not completely clear, Boris Yeltsin, who was Gorbachev's main rival at that time, he had become the president of the Russian Republic, he was free. The coup plotters didn't arrest him. And so he stood up in a tank and he rallied the people to his side. And the other, I think, remarkable thing was a press conference the coup plotters gave that day. One of them was completely drunk. The rest were incoherent. The journalists were making fun of them. And you really knew that something had changed.
So why did these coup plotters, these hardliners, decide not to fight back? I mean, there was hardly any bloodshed.
Well, I think they didn't have, if you like, fire in the belly. I don't really think they'd worked this out very well. I think it was half-hearted. And I think in the face of public resistance, and three people were killed in Moscow during these protests, they just decided to back down and they let Gorbachev come back. He was in Crimea on vacation and take the reins again. But of course, it was never the same after that. And Yeltsin kind of publicly humiliated Gorbachev in the parliament after this coup and demonstrably left the Communist Party.
And after this coup, interestingly, 500,000 rock fans in Moscow attend the biggest Western concert in Soviet history, where Metallica's there, AC/DC is there.
Yeah, I mean, there was this feeling really of rejoicing. Obviously, when it failed, the rock concert, people felt kind of liberated. But in those remaining months of the year, things deteriorated greatly in Russia, the economic situation. And then behind Gorbachev's back, Yeltsin, the leader of the Russian Republic, got together with the leader of the Ukrainian Republic and of the Belarusian Republic. And on December 8th, 1991, they got together in a hunting lodge, I think fueled by quite a lot of vodka, and they signed a treaty which essentially dissolved the Soviet Union so that Gorbachev didn't have a country anymore.
And where were you at the time? How did you react personally watching all this unfold?
Well, when the coup actually happened, I happened to be on vacation in France. And I have to say, for the first 24 hours, I thought they were going to succeed. I thought we were going to go back to the old Soviet Union. And then, of course, I was probably as surprised as many other people that they failed. And then I think we watched in disbelief for the rest of 1991. I mean, those of us that had studied the Soviet Union, had spent time there, we couldn't believe that it could just disintegrate. And it's still a big puzzle. How could a nuclear superpower, the largest country on Earth, spanning 12 time zones, how could it just die from within? It wasn't defeated in a war. It just disintegrated. And I think that's why it was very hard for many people to believe that it was going to end like that.
And just briefly, and I know this is an unfair question to ask in a hurry, given where Russia is today, how do you think about the significance 30 years later of these events of 91?
Well, I think what we're seeing today with the crisis between Russia and Ukraine is that the collapse of the Soviet Union is, in a sense, still going on. It's only 30 years. You have these independent countries, but Russia really would like to bring them in some way back into the fold. So I think that, plus I think there's a nostalgia in Russia today for the Soviet times when people think, you know, things were more stable and, you know, Russia was a great power, there was more order. That doesn't extend to the younger generation. So I think there's still some hope in the future for change there. But I think there are, if you look at the public opinion polls, a significant number of people in Russia today who really regret the collapse of the Soviet Union, and none more so than Vladimir Putin himself.
Angela Stent is director of the Center for Eurasian, Russian, and East European Studies at Georgetown University. Angela, thank you very much.
And thank you for having me on your show, Scott.
Let's turn now to talk about what happened next in the aftermath of the Soviet Union collapse. Boris Yeltsin was the president of Russia, and it was a time of uncertainty for the newly independent country, trying to find solid economic and political footing after almost 70 years of being part of the Soviet Union. And with us now is Masha Gessen, who's a staff writer at The New Yorker. Masha, welcome.
Thank you.
So when the hammer and sickle flag came down over the Kremlin back in 1991, where were you, and do you remember your reaction?
I think I was in San Francisco at that particular moment. I had been in and out of Russia all year. And my reaction was sort of jubilation on the one hand. On the other hand, it wasn't a really clear moment. There was this odd period of about 4 months between the failed coup in August 1991 and the official dissolution of the country in December. When people weren't quite sure, you know, did the Soviet Union still exist? Where did they live? So in a way, it was kind of putting an official name to something that people sensed had already happened after August.
So then throughout the 90s, Boris Yeltsin is in power. As far as the economy for regular people, what was it like?
A lot of weird things happened to the economy. But, you know, at the time that that the Soviet Union collapsed, and this played a huge role in the collapse of the Soviet Union, the economy was in absolute shambles. The biggest challenge facing Soviet leaders in 1991 and Russian leaders in 92 was preventing famine. I mean, most state policies at the time were aimed at making sure that at least the large cities had enough food supplies to prevent mass starvation. What did happen was just this massive feeling of being destabilized, of having the rug pulled out from under you, of not knowing how the society around you functioned, how you were supposed to, you know, to do simple things like find a job, make a living, get your kids to school, get clothing and food, right? All the things that had been not only obvious like they would be in most societies, but really very rigidly sort of prescribed and regimented. like all of that fell apart. It was as though the entire country had moved to a foreign land without ever physically moving.
Masha Gessen is a staff writer at The New Yorker, and their most recent book is Surviving Autocracy. And we are going to continue this conversation with Masha Gessen next week to hear more about how Russia has evolved in the 30 years since the Soviet Union dissolved, and how Vladimir Putin, who was handpicked by Yeltsin to succeed him and who's been in power for more than 20 years, has shaped the country.
There isn't a cat alive who remembers a time before Putin. It's been an extraordinarily long time, and it's in weird ways reminiscent of a kind of sense of timelessness that was prevalent in the Soviet Union in the 1970s, where it just felt like nothing was ever really going to change.
That conversation next week.